You're listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network. I can't be the only person who watches this movie and keeps expecting Jacob Marley to show up at some point, right? I mean, like, it was so... It's Christmas time. It's about, like, the most skinflintiest guy who has ever existed in real life.
Okay.
And, like, scene after scene where you're, like, you're pretty much doing a Scrooge impression at this point. Why aren't there three... Well, technically four ghosts.
The one thought I had was, why did they replace Kevin Spacey? This would have been the perfect movie since his career is pretty much over anyway.
Right.
And everybody's going to hate you on screen. This would have been the perfect way for his career to go.
Because I don't think it's possible to hate this character or this real-life person, John Paul Getty, any more than you do already.
Yeah.
Like, people's heads would just explode if Kevin Spacey had still been playing this part in the movie.
They keep on amping up, like, the, you know, the hate on him, you know?
Every time you think he can't be any shittier as a human being, I mean, there's a point where Michelle Williams in here actually just starts laughing when she's, like, hit rock bottom and she realizes that... Oh my God! Even that one thing I thought he did—that was
nice. Direct parallel with Donald Trump giving up, like giving up counterfeit cufflinks to people. Like, he routinely gives up.
Right?
Yeah, he says they're like $1 million cufflinks, and they get them appraised in cubic zirconia.
They're nothing. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, no. I'm saying it's not. But
somebody there's going to be situation. A very disturbingly trashy movie made about Donald Trump that I can't wait for personally.
I want to see that.
Get the guy who did I Tanya to do it.
Yes, totally.
Anyway, this film is directed by Ridley Scott. This is based on the book Painfully Rich: The Outrageous Fortunes and Misfortunes of the Heirs of J. Paul Getty. J. Paul Getty was at one point the richest man, as they point out at the beginning of this movie, not just in the world, but in the entirety of human history, who basically is the guy who got convinced the Middle East to start drilling for oil and selling it to him. Like, they're like, oh, he invented the super tanker just so he could get the oil here. And when we get into the story here, involves his grandson, played by Charlie Plummer. And is he actually related?
No.
He's not related? That's a weird coincidence. Playing John Paul Getty III, who is wandering around in Rome in the 70s, which looks like the most awesome thing you could ever do, right? Just like, oh my God, that looks amazing. And he gets abducted by a bunch of people in VW minibus, as you do in the 70s, or even now, I think. And they go, okay, well, we want a ransom for him. We want $17 million. You're the richest guy in the world. Problem is, what they don't really understand, what most of the world doesn't really understand, is that, well, his mom, played by Michelle Williams, is long since separated from his dad, who is a real loser. And not that it would have mattered, because neither one of them ever got a cent from the, like I said, Scroogiest Scrooge whoever Scrooged. Christopher Plummer coming in and just playing it. Like I said, he's playing Scrooge at 11 here. And doing a really good job of it, I thought, overall.
Yeah,
you know?
I thought so too, yeah.
And they're like, it's crazy. His grandfather's the richest man in the world. We want the money. And she's stuck in a position going, there is literally no money. I mean, I'm like even 2 months behind in rent. That's how bad the situation is. And there ends up being a go-between. Like, it's not till like an hour into the movie that Mark Wahlberg even shows up.
He's like the head of the personal security for John Paul Getty.
Exactly. He's like an ex-CIA guy, but who's more of a negotiator.
He's entrusted with trying to get the son back.
You think it's from the trailers it's going to turn it into, like, you know, a Mark Wahlberg movie.
Yeah.
And he's really, like I said, he's more of a guy who's used to making deals on a Getty-type level, just dealing with more illicit types.
He's a middleman, I think.
Yeah, he's getting the dirty work done, basically. Even though he's next to useless in this scenario.
Yeah, this is as far removed from a Mark Wahlberg movie as you can get. He's actually, like, the most boring part of the movie.
Yeah, I really disappointed in his, because, there wasn't a whole lot for him to do. Maybe it's because I was expecting him to do some of the stuff we've seen, but like...
Well, I was refreshed that he didn't Mark Wahlberg it up. I just thought he did a decent job with the character. Like, I didn't want him to be more Mark Wahlberg in this
role.
Well,
no, I agree, but at the same time, there wasn't much to the character.
Yeah, because he's still capable of putting in a good performance like he did in The Departed. There wasn't very much to that character either, but that was a good performance.
Yeah. I was actually most impressed here, both with Michelle Williams, who's kind of... She's almost doing that mid-Atlantic accent. She's like halfway there.
No, she's there.
But you think
she's
there?
Appropriately there for the time
she's
here.
She's doing that thing. Like, but, you can tell you can see some actors like acting, like purposely acting, like Jennifer Lawrence in American Hustle. Like they're like trying to, you know, a little too hard.
Yeah.
And there are times at the beginning when you feel like she is doing that, but she actually nestles into that character pretty well.
Yeah, it takes a little while because it is, like I said, with that accent, it's a little extreme. But there's a point where, like, when she's really. Like, when she gets mad or when she's, like, at rock bottom and is just shaking while she's talking, you're just like, okay, that's amazing.
When she's, like, pretty much done with John Paul Getty, and when, like, at one point he says, and I love my grandson, too, and she's just like, Like, that's like, you totally buy it.
Completely, like, tell him off and just lose it completely. You know, it's amazing.
It's hard to believe this is a true story, is the big thing. And I think that not on the level of something like one of those caper movies. You're just like... How is anyone this fucking self-involved and evil? You know, there's a scene they use in the trailer where Mark Wahlberg's asking Christopher Plummer, saying, like, look, you just made, like, a one of the biggest deals you've had in a long time. I just heard you. You're richer than anybody in the world. How much do you need to feel secure? And he says, more.
Yeah, exactly.
That's insane. I may one of those people makes you hope maybe there is some kind of hell just so that they'll be resting there for all of eternity like they deserve.
Hell is ever being satisfied, is it?
Yeah, hell is. Yeah. I mean, it's not like you're a happy person if you're that person, right?
Could never relax, could never trust anybody.
Yeah,
you know.
No human connections. Yeah. We're not going to get all deep and philosophical. But I also really liked, I believe his name was Roman Duris, who plays...
The nicest kidnapper in the
who's
world.
Who's like, one of the kidnappers who's like, actually gives a really interesting performance as the guy who's sort of like in charge more of like, mostly with communicating with
the heart. He's less of a villain than the grandfather of the kidnapped victim.
He cares more about the victim.
With as little amount of malice as kidnapping a person you can have. Like, it's literally the idea of this is the grandson of the richest man in the world. Why wouldn't he give us $17 million? Let's just hold on to him.
Yeah, what's it?
Not hurt him.
It's a no-brainer. We'll just like,
And like ruthless people, he gets marked down.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Oh my God, Ruthless People. I would still tell people, go see Ruthless People.
Ruthless People's great.
Ruthless People is one of those forgotten masterpieces. Like, people, I don't think young people even know about it.
Yeah, that's hilarious.
But it's so great. Yeah, it is. Similar story, except where somebody, Danny DeVito's wife, is kidnapped. Very, very good. I think in terms of cinematography, I thought this was absolutely gorgeous. There are scenes in here.
It's a really Scott movie.
Like, it's just, wow, like jaw-dropping moments of the way it's filmed. But I think that I found a lot of problems in the script where I just thought it was so on the nose and it was kind of corny. And some of the dialogue was really just like, wow, that was really silly.
There was moments where I'm like, Ridley Scott, you're 82 years old. Like, you don't need to make every script that comes across your desk. Like,
that's true. It's also kind of like fragmented. I mean, you know, it's sort of structured a little bit.
I felt like the way that it jumps around didn't really serve it very well. And then the end, they move some things around where, like, something didn't happen until 3 years later, and they made it seem like it happened at the same time. That didn't really make any sense. Like, I can understand from a dramatic point of view, and basically this is an indictment against the 1%. Like, you have to see it that way, and just like, you know, you can't trust the rich people to take care of you, even if you're family.
It feels so obvious that they did that.
Yeah, it's just so on the nose that you're like, is there any subtlety to this film?
No.
At all? It's like, is there anyone who's like, that never occurred to me before? Well, obviously there are. We voted Trump for president. But still, you know what I'm saying? I was like, I kept going, I mean, I'm enjoying watching this, but I don't think this movie is as, like, smart and deep as you think it is.
No, not
like,
at all.
I don't think it's necessarily trying to be smart and deep. I think it is trying to be populist entertainment. I don't necessarily think that it succeeds completely in that direction. It's trying to kind of strike a balance between that. And it's interesting because I think Ridley Scott has had this case on the brain for a long time. Because you know, he actually like ended up casting the great-grandson of John Paul Getty. Balthazar Getty in the movie White Skull. And his brother Tony Scott directed Man on Fire, which the novel was directly inspired by this case. And Tony Scott was the original director of the original version that fell apart, went to another director, and then he ended up getting to make his own version
later. I feel like if we were to go to George's house, it'd be like a curtain you'd pull back, and there's one of those boards with pictures and thumbtacks and strings tying the thumbtacks together.
I had that when my children drew over it with crayons.
They just ruined it for you. I mean, like, there's nothing inherently wrong with this except that it's too long.
Yeah.
It's just, and you're right, it does feel more like populist entertainment, but that's what is, like, why is, if that's what you're making, then why is it over 2 hours long?
It did an HBO miniseries feel to it.
Yeah, it totally did.
I would say, actually, out of all the Ridley Scott movies, it feels the most like Hannibal.
Okay, it's been so long.
Without the serial killing and brain eating, it feels like Hannibal
to me. And the Wild Hogs.
Yeah, yeah. Like both
Gary Oldman, the period
detail. Well, not the period detail, but locations, the photography, just the general pace feels a lot like Hannibal to me.
It has that sort of panache and that flair to it, the Hannibal. Yeah.
I mean, no one would have been surprised if there was a scene where they, you know, come on and John Paul Getty and he's eating, like, one of his servant's brains. He would have, like, just never would have phased you at a certain point.
Saudi Arabian children.
Yeah, exactly. He's just, like, ripping off arms and gnawing on them like ribs. Like, yeah, that wouldn't have been surprising because he's, like, he's so over-the-top evil. I mean, this makes me want to read the book to get a picture of, like, who this guy really was, because there's no two sides to this guy.
No, and apparently this is like a small section of the book, so maybe the book is worth checking out. Yeah.
His story is more interesting than the little picture that we get here. And like I said, it's just, as you were saying earlier, it's like for dramatic like purposes, there's a sort of sense of like, where is this going?
Yeah.
You know, like this just, it feels like you're constantly in the middle of a movie. And never, like even ramping up to anything. It's, like, right off the bat, you're like, this feels like the middle of something.
Well, the irony of it is they give you, like, sort of two... They juggle two endings, essentially, at the very end, which, you know, by themselves could have made just an ending for a regular standard, like, type movie.
Damn it. I had to run out before the very end of this because we had so many reviews tonight, and I didn't want to leave everybody else sitting around. But
I mean, if you end up with a screener of it or something, you should at least watch the end.
Oh, no, I will.
I think it ends in...
Because, like I said, I did. I would definitely say I enjoyed this. Mm. You know, I just don't think it's, you know, Oscar worthy. I guess.
Yeah. No.
You know, awards worthy. I mean, I mentioned the two people I thought who were most interesting in this, and then I think the cinematography is definitely worth a note. That alone is just so gorgeous. I mean, part of that is just it's fucking filmed in Rome and Tuscany. So what do you want?
So it's accidental.
You know, there's some places you film, you're like, is it the cinematography or is it just that place is that gorgeous? Not even sure, but visually, I was extremely entertained, and it is certainly something that, despite its running time, never feels, you know, you're never not interested. It never goes so far afield that's, oh, we got to develop this character more.
Yeah.
Even though it never goes anywhere the way things that run this long often do.
Yeah.
You know, I kept expecting them to go, and now here's Mark Wahlberg's home life and his family.
It's 2 hours.
Like, nobody cares.
It's all right.
Nobody cares.
It's not that long.
Nobody gives a shit on Mark Wahlberg.
That's pretty long.
In this movie.
Wow. That's pretty long for populist entertainment. That's very long. This ain't no Jumanji, is all I'm saying. let's go to final thoughts. George, why don't you lead us off with your final thoughts?
You know, if it wasn't for the Christopher Plummer thing, I think this would be more forgettable. I think what they pulled off is amazing. Like, Christopher Plummer, if you didn't know that he was subbed in for the last moment, there's a couple shots that feel a little weird, but that could have just been, you know...
Getting used to it, probably.
No, I mean, they filmed on location and this had to be a green screen for
some
reason.
We were looking for it. I know we all were,
yeah,
and
no,
there was never anything where
when he gets
I was
aged
sure.
down in the 1948 scenes, this like the exterior of Saudi Arabia, there's one part where it's clearly digital compositing in a way that doesn't really sell it.
Yeah.
Where you could tell he was dropped in.
But
like, aside from that, like that shot seems to be the worst, but overall, like, you just forget.
Yeah.
And that, like, had you not known, you just thought, okay, well, that was just bad digital compositing anyway.
It's a miracle of technology that worked.
It's amazing they pulled it off. I think Christopher Plummer is amazing in this, you know, as far as that goes. I don't necessarily think it's Oscar caliber, but I don't really like to think that way anyway. I think Michelle Williams, for me, is this movie. Like, she carries it for me. I like a lot of aspects of it. I like that, you know, one kidnapper in particular is less of a villain than, you know, the grandfather. And overall, I would give it 7 out of 10 fluctuating oil prices.
JC?
I mean, I get excited for any potential Ridley Scott movie, and the recasting of Kevin Spacey added that other extra layer of intrigue to this. So I don't really know where my expectations were at coming in, because that's sort of a huge hurdle to overcome, recasting somebody and reshooting all of the scenes within 6 weeks.
I still can't believe it worked.
Yeah. Oh. And they made it seem like it wasn't. They tried to break it down where they're like, oh, it's only 22 scenes. And it's like, well, that's a lot.
It did take days, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. And all of that worked. It worked perfectly. If you didn't know it was recast, you wouldn't have thought it ever was.
Yeah, even the composite scene you were talking about is probably more because they were de-aging him.
Yeah.
It was because he was inserted into the scene. You know, yeah. That's what it felt like when you were watching it. It's like, oh, because he's supposed to look younger.
Yeah. And Michelle Williams, she's not somebody I think of as being one of my favorite actors, but the more I think about it, she always really kind of delivers for me. She's never really turned into a bad performance that I could think of.
She had the best supporting actress down last year, I thought, for Manchester by the Sea.
Yeah, absolutely. And so a little disappointed in Mark Wahlberg, but just because I don't think this was the best use of his skill set.
He's a very particular son.
Yeah.
Why are you talking about Mark Wahlberg like that? What's the problem with this performance?
But I mean, overall, I think, and if you're a Ridley Scott fan, I think there are some things in here you'll appreciate. You mentioned the cinematography. This guy, I looked it up real quick. He has a really impressive list. He's done all the Prometheus, Alien, Covenant. He's also done
The Crow.
Yeah.
Dark City.
Yeah, he did The Counselor, and I was like, when I said it looks like a Ridley Scott movie, I was specifically thinking of The Counselor.
Yeah,
that it looks guy, like.
What's his name?
Darius Wolski.
Yeah, he seems to be like his go-to guy in cinematography.
Overall, I think if this has a lot of elements that you'll like if you're a fan of Ridley Scott, if you're like a fan of the way his movies look, if you're a fan of Michelle Williams, I think there's a lot of things here that'll end up satisfying you.
But not if you're a Mark Wahlberg fan.
No. if you are a fan of those things, though, they do have an extensive library of better films. But, I mean, you probably won't regret seeing this if you do. I would probably give it 6 out of 10... time somebody says, you have all the money in the world.
Twice. But there's also all the blank in the world. I forget what the other one was.
Man, he's writing this shit down in his notebook as it went. So
all the money in the world is spoken twice.
Fair enough. Frank?
Well, I think JC actually mentioned it could have been spoken a third more, like, appropriate time.
It had the I can't think of a lot of movies that end... The last line is the title of the movie. I'm sure there are some, but I just can't think of any offhand. But this wasted that moment.
Mark Wahlberg should have turned to the camera and gone, it's not like you have all the money in the world.
The title card at the end could have actually, like,
tells
you the post.
That would have worked.
All the money in the world,
I'm glad the recasting happened, only because, first of all, I love Christopher Plummer, and I think he just does an amazing job in this, even, you know, out Christopher Plummer's himself. But if they had stayed with Spacey, I think it would have felt like Kabuki Theater. I think it would have felt like really, like, exaggerated. I think he would have played old. He wouldn't have played J. Paul Getty. He would have played an old man in the way he probably, you know, would. But,
it would have been more yelling.
Yeah, exactly. And, like, more crotchety walking, stuff like that.
He would have first been crotchety walking with a limp and then not with a limp.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I need to look up the old Kevin Spacey trailer because I'm curious. Now.
Yeah, I know, right?
I
hate to admit I would if someone put in front of me the cut with Kevin Spacey. I would sit and watch it just for comparison purposes, you know?
Yeah, but on the whole, I agree with everybody. You know, this thing reminded me of those movies they used to have. They used to be like all, you know, every Christmas they used to be like these really prestige movies that tried to be awards movies and also audience pleasers. And I kept on thinking about The Godfather 3, how that was a big Christmas movie back in 1990.
Right.
and how it was, you know, it tried so hard and did so much and had every element it could to be both an audience movie and get all the Oscars. And that's what this movie reminded me of. It seems like it's trying really, really hard, and as hard as it tries, it can't help but, you know, plateau, like be just as, you know, as much as it could be, which is decent, but it's not the best that any of these people have done.
No.
It's good work from everybody, but, you know, it is what it is.
Yes.
Yeah. It's now like, you know, that type of movie is now like a sort of like passé, like sort of, you know, like a parody of itself almost. But it works for the most part. So I guess I got to give this about 6, 6.5 really good-looking steaks that I wish I was fed.
Damn, that was going to be mine, because I was looking at
really?
That steak going, oh, man, that looks good. I want to eat the shit out of that steak.
Totally.
You were like, that kid is so lucky.
Yeah, I know, right? all right, so I don't know if Roger Ebert and his little film dictionary thing ever coined a term for it, but I felt like there needs to be a term for movies like this that want really bad to be that like I want to be this like fun populist thing that like everybody can enjoy watching but also is just get all the awards. Yeah. And I don't know what that is, but it so rarely works, quite frankly. It's okay. It's passable. There's things about this that are really good. But it's uneven in that sense, that not everything about it is really good. Like, at the end, you're kind of left with a sense of, that was a movie I watched.
Yeah.
You know?
It's complete opposite of The Martian, which actually does work.
The Martian, I was like, wow, I can't believe that Ridley Scott movie was as good as it was, because I'm not a Ridley Scott fan, really. Sorry. Not anymore, anyway. You know, my favorite movie of all time is a Ridley Scott movie, which I just got the poster signed by Drew Struzan, and I'm so excited.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I'm very thrilled about that. But, yeah, it's all right. I agree with you guys. Michelle Williams, I think, is terrific here. I think she's a deeply underrated actress. And I don't think this is going to be the role we're all going to remember her for. But it's
a highlight.
But it's a highlight. It's a strong performance. Interesting performances by everybody else except Mark Wahlberg, who just feels dreadfully miscast. Like he's so out of place for this part. I'm like, really? Mark Wahlberg for this role? Just, he brought nothing to it. But then again, there wasn't much there in the first place in the way the character is written. It's the script is uneven as all hell. It's, you know, another thing there needs to be a dictionary definition for, like a Roger Ebert type definition, is that movies that are biopics like this, that you're like, I think the only reason I'm enjoying this is to the level I am is because the actual real life story and knowing it's a real life story is interesting. I'm not sure how much of this I like is that and how much I like is the movie and the craft of making it. Because this felt like one of those. Like, this is an interesting story in real life, but would I have gotten as much out of this by reading the Wikipedia page on it?
Well, the difference, isn't it, between, like, based on a true story and inspired by a true story?
Yeah, well, this says inspired, so I'm curious, you know, the degree.
And even at
which...
the end, it says that things were removed or changed, you know, for dramatic purposes.
Right. That's when... So I missed the scene with Jacob Marley at the very end, then, I assume.
Yeah.
Which they totally should have done just for the season. I'm just saying. Yeah, this is okay. I give it a 6 out of 10... fuck you, Frank. I take the steak one. Because damn.
As long as I keep my ears, then I'm happy.